podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Yet again, Divock Origi makes the universe feel like a very different place. It is the Anfield Wrap with Paul Cope, Harry Pryor and John Gibbons on a Monday for you after Saturday at 4:55pm. There was the period of time, John, before Virgil van Dijk whips the ball out 40, 50 yards to Mo Salah. Salah's touch as he drives forwards, whips it across towards Divock Origi. The period just before then, I would say, was possibly the first time you and I were stood together where it did feel like all hope was lost. It was wrong for all hope to be lost. There is always hope.
Yeah, well, there is. There is. In my defence, I'd sort of lost track about how much stoppage time there'd been, and so did everyone around me because there were some wild shouts.
Yeah.
You know, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, six at one point when there was only 5 minutes added on. But yeah, people were unsure, so I thought that was it. But you know, this team just keep doing it. I saw an amazing start, you know, in Premier League history. You know, that's the 39th time we've scored a stoppage time winner, and the next highest of any team is 13 below. So we've done it 13 more times than number two, which I assume is Manchester United. But who knows? But you know, we're just brilliant at it. We must do everyone else's heads in. But I'm all for that.
It's the idea, Paul, I think, that there's always one more chance. And I didn't quite think it was Mané's, but Mané's felt like it had been one, and then there was another foray. The big thing, I think, was they were unbelievably patient, Liverpool. They keep trying to work through midfield. They keep trying to switch the angle. They keep trying to find the thing that's just going to stretch Wolves one stride too many. And it's that, you know, if you want to do the same conversation before we get on to the sheer Origi-ness of it all, the same conversation is that's why they get what they deserve. You know what I mean? In that period, it's not going for them. But what no one does on the pitch really is panic.
Yeah, and that's the sign of how good this football team is now, and the maturity and the growth that we've seen over the years. But we've seen it. You and I have talked on the review about this season, about the development during the season of them seeing, almost remembering what it was like to be league winners 2 years ago and how you do that. And I think we saw that all in the game. There was a little spell in the second half where it looked like they lost it for a few minutes. Like it was like, oh, we need... I was sitting watching with my uncle and I went, I think everyone needs to remember there's half an hour left here. Yep. There was a moment, I think it might have been Jota's chance and Cody, like just diving in front of something on the halfway, on the goal line. And in that moment, I think they're all looking at each other and they look at the watch. It's like when you're playing footy and you're like, how long left, ref? And it's like, if there's 2 minutes left, we'll get through. And he goes, 30 plus stoppage time. And it's like, oh, we don't want to do this for another half an hour. And I think, I mean, we might get into the conditions they were playing in. The fact that they could do that inside those conditions against a team like this, massively positive sign.
It is massively positive. It's interesting that the being in the ground versus watching outside of the ground. It's also interesting the cold light of day. The cold light of day thing, Harriet, is Liverpool absolutely deserved the 3 points. You know, I watched Match of the Day and Danny Murphy was unbelievably matter of fact about it. Yeah, Liverpool just deserved to win. And in the ground at the time, going through what was a bit of an emotional roller coaster, and it's massively framed by the Jota miss. The idea of Liverpool just deserved this wasn't really going through my head. What was going through my head was, we've thrown this away. When you're in the cold light today, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the highlights, when you watch the game again, when you listen to what everyone says, Liverpool just deserved to win the game.
It was one we absolutely deserved to win, but it's one that you thought you were going to come away from thinking we've just been frustrated for 90 minutes and we haven't been able to get on the end of any chances, because it's not like we didn't create so many ridiculous chances. I mean, you talk about being in the ground. I was watching from home and we got to half time and I was thinking, there's no way we're getting a goal here, because the way that Wolves set up was so compact. They set up with a plan to frustrate, and they haven't conceded a goal in like three games, have they, or something ridiculous. So we knew that going there was going to be a challenge, but we thought, because we've been scoring the sheer amount of goals that we have, that we've managed to find a way through. It didn't happen that way, I thought, especially in the final third. Some of our final touches were a little bit skeptical, and Mane had a bit of an off day, Jota had a bit of an off day. We've already mentioned some of the misses, but ultimately, you know, we felt like we just had to be patient and find a way through. I didn't think it was going to come, but when Divock Origi's on the pitch, you can never doubt it, can you?
There is this strange thing that happens, because we're in their ground, John. I think, yes, this is the thing. We're in their ground. They haven't won for a couple. And they should have won. You know, these are games that, if they've got serious or significant top halves / European ambitions, they've dropped points. Not the game against Liverpool, don't get me wrong, but in the games prior, they've dropped points with those nil-nils. The speed with which, especially in that second half, it does really just become attack versus defence. I think the first half, it's quiet of general incident. The second half does become attack versus defence. And again, in your own mind, there's the threat of Traore, which we'll come back to. But ultimately, it is just, in Molineux, on a Saturday at 3 p.m. their crowd being up for it, but their crowd backing the idea, it's attack versus defence. That's what I think is really interesting. They were enjoying the time wasting, the crowd. They were glorying in the time wasting. They were made up when Jimenez kicked it into the crowd. They kept the ball off the... You know what I mean? They were into it. And I think that's something Liverpool are going to have to think about a little bit. If you're known as this unbelievable attacking force, then not just for your home games, but for away games against decent sides, they're going to start treating you like just stopping these from scoring feels like a win.
Yeah, I think there has been a bit of a shift, really, and it's not just for us. I think everyone's decided there's basically three boss teams in this league and then everyone else is miles from them. And I think, you know, in the past, like, as I say, you know, where we go there, you know, we've got an okay record there, but they've won a few, haven't they? They were playing them all on the big screen, sort of, before we started. So, yeah, so, you know, so they were in everyone's memory, really. But as you say, you know, I've never known as many players to go down. But also when the ball went in the crowd, they were throwing it further up the stands, which people might not have realised. From
the 1-0 up, I'd go with sounds, you know, yeah, what I mean? This part, yeah, of literally playing football, yeah, but it's 0-0.
And this is about 60, by, yeah, the way, as well. So it's not like, oh, well, we've got this far, you know, should we all sort of take a point? This was sort of very early. And I think so for Liverpool, you know, as you say, you know, you've got to adapt to that. You've got to get used to it. This is sort of the reality. There's no point us saying, oh, should Wolves be approaching this, you know, like that, you know, it's not our job in a way, they are. So we've got to, you know, deal with that sort of, you know, what's in front of us. And I think there'll be a lot of it. And I think we'll surprise ourselves throughout the season, you know, more of these grounds go to where you think, oh, this could be, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to put two up and have a real go, like, and then they got Jimenez running channels. I felt a bit sorry for him, to be honest with you. You know, he's a forward, he wants chances, he wants sort of people around him. And they were just getting him sort of, you know, I don't know, like it was like playing Heskey on his own up front and just asking him to do loads of sort of, you know, like loads of the tough stuff. You know, that's what it felt like to me, really. But we had to dig in, you know, we had to sort of, you know, try and keep some. I think for us, it was the challenge for us was almost kind of trying to, you know, because we were trying to build momentum and they just were trying to kill it. And yeah, so we're a team, you know, especially at the moment, so I feel he builds pressure, and then boom, we break the dam. They were just trying to kill all that, really. So we'd have a few minutes, and then me and you would go, oh, here we go, you know, it's building, and then suddenly the ball would disappear. And one of their lads would be down again. He'd be like, oh, so we, you know, it's like what Kopey said before, you know, if you think about all the different things they had to cope with that day and they came through it, it's a brilliant, brilliant win.
The big thing for me that they've got to cope with, and again, having watched a lot of football, people can feel sorry for themselves, and teams can, that can infect, it can spread through a team. The miss chance from Diogo Jota Harriet, is the scope and size of it is hard to put into words. It's how long he's got. It's the nature that the two players are just moving backwards. Like, I think if he holds onto the ball for another second, there's, yeah, a chance both of them are actually a yard and a half behind the line, because, yeah, they're just backpedaling as well as he's moving forward.
They're falling back, aren't they?
Yeah, I actually wondered if it might end up just being given. You know, when they meet after your first quarter, I just thought this might be one where the referee in a minute goes, oh, hang on, that crossed the line.
Mm.
Every bit of it there, those players, they're moving closer together. The space he's got in the goal is getting bigger. He's moving towards the space he's got in the goal. The keepers know. Every last bit of it was the sort of thing that becomes the thing you rue. And everyone rues. And I think Jota does go a little bit within himself, which is fair enough, but the rest of the team don't stand for it.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that's most impressive about this sort of... I know Manny went over there and had a little word with him immediately afterwards as well. I don't know what he said. I mean, what did he say? But I think that's what this side did ever so well, in terms, to talk about the patience, they didn't let that just become the defining force.
No, I really enjoyed a match of the day where they basically drew a big box over where he could have scored, and I was like, I think he probably knows that on reflection, but it was basically everywhere apart from literally where the two defenders were, and they were like, yeah, this is where he could have shot, but he didn't. So yeah, I think it's definitely a mentality thing for me and a patience thing, because it's interesting that after the Everton game and after a few games this season, Klopp's come out, even when we've scored four or five goals, and he's like, I wasn't actually that happy with the performance because we let our mentality dip there, we let our form dip there for that 10 minutes, whereas he came out after that and was like, we had to learn within that game, within that 90 minutes, how to play against Wolves and how to win against Wolves. And it's been really obvious at other times this season how to beat Everton, for example, or how to beat Man U, which when it shouldn't be, but it was so hard to go to Wolves and learn, okay, how are we actually going to break this down and get a win? And I think that's why he was so impressed with the mentality, because it took an incredible amount of patience, an incredible amount of missing chances that just should have been goals that didn't go in, to then pick themselves up up again and think, no, we're going to get a chance here, even if it's a 90 plus 4 minutes. And they did, and they had to keep working. But to keep that mental strength, that composure and that togetherness within the team and not let their heads go down and not ever think that they're playing for a draw is really impressive. And I think that's why Klopp was so buzzing after the game, like we all were.
Origi, I think in this, he doesn't just save 2 points. I would suggest he may to an extent save Diogo Jota's December. It's the sort of we've seen in the past.
Jota commented thanks on his Instagram post. Like, you helped me out a lot there.
It is the sort of thing that when you win the game, you know, I'm sure when he's going into training, I'm sure when they're on the plane to Milan, I'm sure in a number of different ways it's getting occasionally mentioned to him. But he can do the rueful smile. Not there, because if he doesn't score, it's not getting mentioned to him. No one's talking about it. And one state of affairs is better than the other, Paul. And for me, this is getting what Jota hasn't really had yet. You know, last season we do well. In the end, we come third. But he's not had to be dug out of a hole. You know, and all these players that have gone through 17, 18, into 18, 19, into 19, 20, they've had that shared moment of digging each other out of a hole. Mm-hmm. At some point over the course of a 90 minutes, someone saved the day somewhere. Someone's felt like the hero. Someone else could have felt like the villain. But in the end, that's not quite, it's not come out that way, and everyone's had that. I think this is really important. You can keep winning 3 or 4 nil. But what this does for a squad, an individual in the case of Jota, this is the sort of thing that really galvanises everyone. And you got to see those scenes with the celebrations. They were celebrating that one thing for about 90 seconds. It was all ongoing for ages. I couldn't believe how long it lasted.
Yeah. And do you know what? This ties into something that I'm getting really into at the moment in life in general, is that when bad things happen, you don't know what was the alternative. Like, he could have scored that chance and we lost 2-1.
Yeah.
And what he's done is, and this is what the attitude I'd be taking if I was him, I'd be saying to everyone, if it wasn't for me, you didn't get that moment. If it wasn't for me, I knew what was going to happen. You might have all been panicking. I had it all under control. I have faith in Divock. I knew what was going to go on. And that is the thing. Without him missing that chance, none of us get that moment. We don't get another Divock moment. We don't get... The marketing team at Liverpool must have been absolutely made up when Divock came out afterwards and he went, "Oh, we just told me to just be Divock." Like, oh my God, that miss from Jota has probably made the club.
Trademarked that already, Liverpool.
Yeah, they will. I mean, if they haven't, just it's crazy. that miss has probably made them 10 million in t-shirt sales alone. And I love that. And I like what you're saying. And it would be really interesting, the sliding doors moment, to see how the squad reacts to Jota missing that chance if we drop points. Because I'd like to think, actually, it does get mentioned.
And
everyone does do the, just take the piss out of it. Or whatever it is that makes it go away and it's okay. But who knows? It's an interesting one. I mean, I'm sure we can spend the rest of the show talking about Divock, can't we? The miss itself, I love Harriet's point, is brilliant. Another advertising thing for the Amphere rap. To watch analysis like that on Match of the Day is just stunning, isn't it? He should have just put it there. Like, really, Danny? I mean, thanks for that. I'm glad we all pay our license fee for this type of analysis. And look, just one last thing as well on the general point that I wanted to say, which was, when I was coming in today, I was thinking about what John was saying about the way teams approach us. And I think this is something we're going to have to spend a lot more time thinking about. Because I was thinking, if you boil football down, there's only like 4 approaches to a game. There's try and win, try and draw, try not to lose, and try not to get absolutely battered. And I think it's not like black and white. There's a scale before every game. So like, they'll go into that game, Wolves might go into that game going, okay, this is a 0.5% try to win. It's a 10% try and get a draw. It's a 50%. I'm trying to do the maths to go along now and I've lost count. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's a massive chunk of just don't get absolutely battered. And football is always in context of everything else. You look, we've just gone to our biggest rivals, Old Trafford and then Goodison. And what did they both try and do? They both tried to play us, and they're trying to win was like, Joe, 50%, 20%, what on a sliding scale. And we battered them.
Yep.
So that ties into the whole, the fans going. I made up, because I was watching at home, so we didn't see at home the fans throwing the ball back. We saw the Jimenez. At one point, I'm like, Jimenez should be booked 3 times. This is
kicks it in and then punches it back in.
It was amazing watching. I was like, mate, you are taking the piss, but fair play, he's only going to book you once for it.
No, it is, you know, it is interesting, sort of, you know, what everyone's been sort of saying so far around kind of you know, how moments can change games and how moments can change seasons, and how Jota, you know, gets to tell that story, as Cope's just said there. It's like, well, actually, I was part of this sort of, you know, big wider thing, you know, of this thing. And moments can have sparks, and that's, you know, with an emotional team, you know, with an emotional manager and an emotional driven manager, and he's, you know, able to say to them, you know what I mean? We'll be talking about that in March. We'll be talking about that in May, that day in December when we went there. You know, we interviewed him one summer and he was still buzzing off the Clavin goal at Burnley, wasn't it? And people have been comparing it to West Ham, but maybe it's more Clavin at Burnley.
I think so, because yeah. I had the same migraine afterwards as well.
because the Villa one, we were just sort of rubbish, really, and somehow, you know, sort of got away with one, whereas this one we were the best team, and I think against Burnley we've been the better team and actually got ourselves 1-0 up, and then sort of had the sort of disappointments. And so I think maybe, you know, this one's, you know, that mad, you know, Clavin's a bit of a cult hero sort of as well, but it was interesting that, you know, we were going into next season when we interviewed Jürgen and he was still talking about Burnley, and I think that'll be sort of a similar thing for this, hopefully. You know, it all depends sort of what they do next, and there's two other teams up there who are trying to write their own stories, aren't they, and come up with their own days. But yeah, just a massive win for Liverpool.
It is indeed. More on the idea of what Paul is saying there around how sides are going to approach us, 0-0 down on the review. If you subscribe to the Anfield Wrap, you'll be able to get some of that, but more on that to come. Harry, you said before about the first half, there was a lot of little attacking touches that just weren't quite coming off. I think Liverpool's shape's fine. I think they're pretty good in terms of winning the ball back. There's an intensity out of possession, but they're playing at such pace that if those touches around the opposition box don't quite go right, suddenly there's no one, or it looks all a bit daft. And there was a couple of them I felt where they were almost playing, trying to just play so quickly, yeah, that there wasn't the runner, or there wasn't the right angle, and I think that was what was frustrating for the first sort of 55 minutes of the game.
Yeah, you got the sense that they were just trying to build again and again and again so quickly that they almost didn't have time to think about what happened last time and where it went wrong and why the final touch didn't work. There was a sense that they were overwhelming Wolves, but not to the extent where they couldn't handle it and couldn't get back quick enough. And I think you mentioned it further down on the agenda, but that Traore was like that one attacking threat that meant we couldn't just go all in and we couldn't just commit all our men, because we knew that Traore was sort of coming at us as an attacking option, but a very strange attacking option because he does a lot without doing very much. I know that's a bit of a mad thing to say, but
no, it's exactly the right thing to say.
Yeah, and I felt like after Firmino got that yellow card and he obviously tripped him up, and then he felt like he couldn't fully manage him in the way that he wanted to manage him, which was probably to get more yellow cards, which he obviously couldn't do. I you know, it was an interesting one because we kept the attacking threat the entire game, but there was just nothing happening in the final third, and that was what was really frustrating. And a couple of the players had off days. I did think, to be fair to Wolves, that they contained Salah really well in a way that maybe many teams haven't been able to do.
Eight Nori was excellent.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when didn't he come off in the second half, and that
he
was when
he was off just 5 minutes before the goal.
Yeah, and exactly. And then Salah
he's absolutely done
more space.
Right, like he can't.
I mean, half their team are done by that point, aren't they? Let's be honest. And that's the thing. And I think that's the thing with the patience, is that by that point, by the time you've reached 90 and you're into extra time, half the team are on the floor and you're just thinking, okay, we've got to keep pushing. But yeah, I mean, there's been games many times in this season and in past seasons where they've just not been able to finish in the final third, and that final ball hasn't been coming off, and we saw that a lot, but the threat was there, we kept on pushing, and then ultimately, yeah, we got the goal in the end.
I was really pleased to see the team was unchanged, and it's important to say that, and I don't know, maybe so if someone wants to say around the table they weren't, say so now, but I suspect most Liverpool supporters will have gone, great, no messing about, there's the Milan game to rest players, we go from there. That team more than did the job against Everton, and it wasn't like they had to work that hard last 20. In hindsight, I do wonder, and I wonder if the manager might be wondering, having a couple of chats, because we're talking here about the finest of margins of percent. Liverpool just looked to me a little less sharp, Paul. And that's, I think, again, it might be that the manager, they'll have the conversation with the manager, go, no, actually, absolutely fine. It was just one of them, because it could also just be one of them. That could have been what Wolves were doing. That didn't help us. But I do sort of wonder whether or not, in hindsight, he may well log this one down as, even if I feel this or this, it might always be worth just doing one or two.
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult one, because
it is.
Going back to something we talk about a lot, like sliding doors moments and very small details in football. When I watched, because I was with you, but like in the emotion of watching the game live, you're like, we got away with one there a bit. Even though I was doing it in stoppage time, I was doing the one more chance, there will be one more chance. To do it so late is a big relief. When it was one of those games when you watch the highlights, everybody in the country watched those highlights, were like, God, Wolves were lucky to get to 95 without conceding, weren't they? They absolutely battered them. It wasn't like Do you know, sometimes you have games where you don't create that many clear-cut chances and you dominate the ball. And if you watch the highlights, you're like, well, that domination doesn't come across in highlights. This is one of those games where you're like, oh my God, I'd forgotten about that chance. I'd forgotten about the one that went right across the face of the goal and Salah was just going to tap it in and somehow the lad gets his... I watched that on replay about 10 times before I could understand fully what had happened, how it wasn't a goal. It was wild.
So Thiago's chances are unbelievably good. They're unbelievable. It keeps coming back to him and it should really just end up in.
there's so many of those in it where you're like, how does that not end up in? That there's an argument for, well, we did exactly what was the right thing to do. And on another day, we actually do win that game 4-0. Because if one of those early chances, I mean, even when was Jota's chance on 60, is that was about right? Well, even if that goes in, you've got half an hour of us, Harriet saying and John saying, like, these lads were knackered. They're my favourite ends of football matches when a late goal goes in and the other lads just drop to the floor. They're just like, I am done. And they're not looking at each other. They're not breaking each other. They're not even on their knees. They're lying on their backs looking at the sky. That's how tired they are. We all know what it's like to be that tired. And these are professional athletes who are like that. They haven't been out on the ale the day before. This is them at their peak of fitness. So, but at the same time, I am with you in that. Is there a question of always freshening up just a little bit, just in case? I do think there might be an element of right now, we're getting towards him having his favourite 11 again, which we haven't seen. I don't think we've seen that for a while because I'm partly through availability of players. But I think I love asking myself that question. When people go, well, there isn't a first 11. It's easy to say that for most of the season. But if there's a Champions League final tomorrow, there's a first 11. Mm-hmm. And who is that first 11? And we've seen that before of these are my boys for the games I need to win. And I think where everyone else is fitting into this is, would you rather have Jordan Henderson coming off the bench with 20 minutes to go or Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain coming off the bench if you're playing that general right-sided midfield role? Well, you'd rather start with Jordan and have Oxlade-Chamberlain coming on, probably. And that you can sort of put that all the way through the team, even Divock Origi. Where would you rather have Divock starting or would you rather have him coming on for 20, 25 minutes? What would the other side prefer to have? Mm. Now, in an ideal world, you have two Salahs. And there is an argument of... If you want to really shock the opposition, have Mo Salah ready to come off the bench with 20, 25 minutes and see how the other side like that. The one thing I always come back to with that is you decide who's going to tell Mo Salah that then.
When Paul there talked about his boys, and I think there is an element of that, I think one of the big things to take is up until this one, I think every single time he started coming back from injury, Thiago's come off. And he's come off at times very early. He's come off 58, stuff like that. He does the full 90, and to the patience that we talk about, and to getting the game under control, he is so, so important to Liverpool. You can see why the manager keeps him on, and you can see why, if you are talking about what that Champions League final midfield is, it's most definitely got Thiago Alcantara in it.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's funny, you know, with the manager, with Thiago, isn't it? You know, you've never been completely sure, sort of, you know, whether he's been as convinced as some of the supporters or things like that. You know, there's some big games where he doesn't start him. You know, most famously, both the Madrid sort of quarterfinal Champions Leagues where we end up going out, he doesn't start him in either. But I think, you know, at the moment, he's getting him on there and he's doing the business for him. And whether that's something that Thiago's changed in his game or whether it's just a different way we're trying to play, you know, I don't know. And we'll probably never know, really. But all we can know is right now is that, you know, he seems to be, you know, one of his fellas. And I agree with what Paul said before, is that, you know, you're seeing slightly earlier, I think, in the season than normal, that he's like, nah, this is my sort of team now. And sort of everyone else accepting their place as well. And that's important. Do you know what I mean? So for people like, you know, I was made up to see the bench and how much they were up. Do you know what I mean? That's actually a rarer thing than what you think. Do you know what I mean? I remember times watching Liverpool where you get late goals and a couple of go up and then a couple of others just look sort of bored, really. You look at Tsimikas there, he's going absolutely berserk and you know, he's not had anything to do with the game. You know, he might be sitting there, you know, thinking, oh, I should be playing ahead of him. He looks knackered, you know what I mean, after the week. But instead, you know, he's going mad. You see all the way up Minamino, exactly the same.
And he's been hooked.
Yeah. Minamino was one who we were talking about when we won the league, and he looks like a bit of a spare part, doesn't he? Doesn't know whether he's meant to be there or not. He's sort of looking around, you know, if we win a title now, he's out with us. I think, and so they're all, you know, the you know, it's the knowing the team, but then everyone's sort of knowing the role sort of within that, really, and no one more so than Divock Origi, who, you know, could have left with the club on ages ago, couldn't he? But is so, I think, you know, philosophical about life and about kind of, you know, he's making the most of, you know, he probably would have liked to have gone, you know, at certain points, but he seems to be like, well, I'm just going to stay and play for Liverpool then. Oh, Sam, well, that's all right, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And it is. He's right. Do you know what I mean? Again, Divock's right and the rest of us are wrong. You know what I mean? Like, those of us, you know, all those other players who would have phoned the toys at the pram or said, well, you know, this is, you know, I'm just going to stop putting in training. What's the point? Do you know what I mean? He's kept going and he's sort of got his moments. And I think, as I say, squad harmony, you know, the fact that everyone's sort of knowing their place and how they contribute, but believing that they will contribute when they get the chance is such a massive thing.
Yeah, I just want to go back to Thiago's point, because I thought for me before the game, the question of whether the starting 11 needed freshening up was whether Thiago actually needs a rest and Oxlade-Chamberlain comes back in, because we know for both players how important regular game time and consistency is. But when he's in that midfield now, he's actually setting the tempo for the entire of the game and the entire of the team and the midfield. And I thought that was, for me, what you saw and why Klopp was really reluctant to take him off on Saturday, because he's the only one for me in that midfield on Saturday that is actually able to do that. And I think... you talk about why Klopp wasn't maybe as convinced to me. I think that was the defensive side of his game and whether he was giving away too many sort of odd balls and not, you know, integrating as well into the style of our game. And I thought on Saturday, and actually in the last few games, you've just seen that his defensive side has grown so much.
He wins the ball so well.
He's tracking back so much better than I thought he has in previous games. And I think that's why Klopp is like, yeah, I want him on the pitch for the entirety of the 90, especially against a team like Wolves where they're setting up to literally frustrate, and he is that creative and attacking outlet.
What I think is interesting is the idea of, I think, as football supporters and football supporters of long standing, of, you've had arguments about player X or player Y in the past, and everyone, you can say, oh, you know, we all support the Reds and we do, but some people, you know, end up hanging on to things a bit, some people more than others, but all of us to an extent. What I think is really interesting is Liverpool have just had a little run of games here where across the three of them, you're able to sort of cast your mind back, and, you know, there's the game against Southampton and he goes as he goes, the manager. You've then got Everton, where if it's not for Mo Salah, Henderson's MOM. Then you've got Wolves, where if it's not for Divock Origi, Thiago's MOM. Yeah. And the point about this is that it isn't the manager's job, and nor to an extent, and this feels as though it's controversial, it's not. It's not the players' job to just keep putting nines in. Like, the point of nines is that you don't average nine. No one averages nine. Not even Mo Salah this season will end up averaging nine, if you sort of know what I mean. Yep. I mean, he might just do his best to find a way. But it is that when we need X to come to the party, they're going to come to the party. And it feels as though you've had two games here back-to-back. And I think Henderson does all right against Wolves. I think Thiago plays really quite well against Everton. But in the other game, Henderson's stronger, Thiago's stronger. And that's how this works. That's how a football team works.
Yeah, and not just a football team, a great football team. And I will not stop banging the drum about this, because I don't want in 10, 20, 30 years, whenever we're looking back at this and people go, oh, do you know what? I just didn't make the most of supporting Liverpool back then. I'm like, this is the best football you're ever going to watch. For anyone who complains about this in any way, I'm just like, I don't know. I'd love to sit down and chat with them. I'm always intrigued online everyone should tell their real age, because anyone of our generation who grew up with the stories of the good old days and endured what we endured, not endured, I mean, even that, we were spoilt.
Yeah.
Jesus, I always refer to my mate as a Sheffield United fan, and the number of times he goes to me, mate, your worst days are better than our best days. Like, his best ever moment as a Sheffield United fan up until a few years ago was losing in playoff finals. You're like, oh my God. So you've always got to put that into context. But this is what a great football team does. The fact that they can look at each other. When Harriet mentioned before about Fabinho, one of my favourite things about this game, I don't know, we were going to go on to him about Traore and the management of Traore, is, again, as we were growing up, one of the things we always said about Liverpool was they didn't have enough of the dark arts. They didn't know how to do the things that the likes of Chelsea. I always remember playing Chelsea, and Samuel Eto'o did Jordan Henderson in the first 2 minutes. And we were all up in arms, and I know loads of people don't like this, including one of my aunties who thinks it's mean when I talk about football like this. I'm like, it's part of the game. And the Eto'o thing that day was, right, let Eto'o take one for the team, and if he gets booked, he's not going to get sent in the first 2 minutes, and if he gets booked, it's our centre forward getting booked, who's bothered? And then it leaves everybody else, it really, and it nobbled us for the game, because then Henderson was struggling. We very much the other day. So you've got the creative side that you're mentioning, which is we're all sharing the goals and the creativity and imposing ourselves on the match. And then going the other way, there was very much a clear do him. And once Fabinho had done him and been booked, it was like just a look at each other going, well, I can't do him again now, lads. And Thiago went, don't worry, I've got the next one. Yeah. And it was like tag team. It was Thiago did him, then Robertson did him. And then it's like, right, well, we've all been booked now. So can someone else get closer, please? And whilst that might go unnoticed and people aren't meant to talk about it and some people get annoyed about talking about it, that is part of being a great football team as well. It's we don't let this lad run more than 5 yards with the ball, because once he's run more than 5 yards, we're in trouble. So let's just get rid of it in the same way that Man United did as we were growing up, as we've seen Chelsea teams do.
Robertson has hard lines because he does the thing where he thinks, well, I'm going to do him, but if I win the ball, I win the ball. And he wins the ball and the referee says, yeah, but you were trying to do him, weren't you? It's like, come on, I won the ball. And it was going on for a while. The referee was like, yeah, but I know what's going on. I'm not stupid. This is not my first rodeo. I can see what's going on.
Yeah.
He does skew the game, John. That's the thing I keep coming back to, Traore. I think he's the worst player ever to hugely skew a game of football. Because he redefines the way the whole game works. You've got to have a Traore plan. You've almost got to deal with him really weirdly, like he's Messi, and he is emphatically not Messi. But the flip side is you can't not have the plan to do him. You can't leave him unattended.
Yeah,
it's a really weird thing to watch. I think he verges on unique. He really verges on unique for me.
It is weird to watch because also we're watching from a point of view of Liverpool playing them, and then probably the only other time I'll sit down and watch Wolves is like when City are playing them, and then maybe Chelsea this season, where it'll be a sort of a similar thing, really being asked. The team is set up in a similar way. He's being asked to do a sort of similar thing. So you're watching him and, you know, you're thinking, why isn't he, being picked up by Liverpool? But we're not seeing what it's like, when Wolves play at home against someone else and the teams are being asked to do something, but also the opposition are doing a bit to Wolves. Presumably in those sorts of games, he isn't quite as effective, because if he was doing that to teams every week, then his numbers would be great. And Liverpool are getting linked with him, but we'd be even more so. So it's in the context of a very... It's almost like he's got a specific role for a specific game at a specific sort of time, really. But in those, in this 5% of fixtures that Wolves play, he's an absolute nightmare. And we just happen to be in those 5%, so we're getting the brunt of it, going, I'm sick of this fella who's getting 2 goals a season.
When he goes off, though, it does change the game for them. And that's what's weird, isn't it? He's brought a lot of attacking threat, but not created really any clear cut chances apart from maybe when he manages to out muscle Van Dijk. No shame in that for Van Dijk, really, is there? I mean, he's a big guy, but also when he goes off, they do play worse. So I don't know. He must be doing something right, because they're not as good without him on the pitch. I mean, he was exhausted, he needs to come off, but they weren't as good.
He just makes the game massively different to the way it would be if he wasn't there. And as I say, it's really weird. It's a really weird thing. Like, and at no point there is the Van Dijk one, and he plays a lovely ball with the outside of the foot through to Jimenez, and Jimenez doesn't have the pace to get on the end of it. So it just goes through to the keeper. So apart from that, there's no point where I think this fella's gonna do something that results in a goal. But there's the fact that if you're not careful, he could just run through directly on your goal at any given time. And that is, it's such
just
a...
Just end up in the goal with the ball.
Yeah, maybe just end up, just that, that might be the best way he does this. Yeah. He just runs at the net, hits the net and goes, great, that counts. You know, this is a really, it's such a strange, strange thing to bring to a football match. It almost makes it like a kid's game in a strange way.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And that might be a really good way of describing it, like a kid's game. Because I remember years ago, before we bought Jota, like it was like, if you're going to buy a Wolves attacker for us, who would it be? And everyone was talking about Traore even back then, weren't they? And we bought Jota and everyone's dead surprised. You hear Pep Linders are clopped up about Jota, and you're like, they were always looking at Jota, he was the one for them. I look at Traore now after all the fanfare years ago, and I think you're right that he may be unique, especially for this, is that the gap between what everyone thinks of him and how good he actually is, I think it's massive. Because you've got this thing about him all the time that you're petrified. But then there's like the rational part of my brain's going, he's crap. Like, he's not that good. He doesn't have... He's got this weird thing. I'm with Harriet. At the same time, I want to say he has no impact on a game. And he has all of the impact. Like, he's controlling, as you say, you've got one player on the opposition who half your team's thinking about.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is... And it, John's right as well with the, you know, the type of games we watch him in. But there was that game the other season, wasn't there, where he did what you're just saying to Man City.
Yeah.
And he almost did. You could probably sell him with those the goals he scored in that game again. Don't bother shooting, just keep running, like you're saying. And like a computer game, just run into the goal and Edison just gets barged out the way. And it's not a foul because you've got the ball at your feet, so it's all right. But he literally did that to City. So that's in all of our minds of it is a possibility. So you have to be able to account for the possibility, even though he's not that, is he that good? But I mean, all of this thing ties into the same thing, because even as he was coming off the pitch, every time I see him, I'm like, is he a footballer? Like, he's built like a heavyweight boxer and also a 100-meter sprinter. So even in the uniqueness of his physical attributes, how many footballers have ever been built like him that can run that fast and be that strong?
And keep the ball and control the ball. He has the ball. For all that, is he a footballer, isn't he a footballer thing? It isn't like he kicks it 10 yards in front of him. He's got the ball really close to his feet. That's why I think, you know, there's a couple of times he almost does two mad little sort of horizontal laps of the centre circle where we're guiding him. We're sort of able to shepherd him into a certain area, but no one can get it off him because the ball's right at his feet.
Yeah.
And it's not quite important enough to foul him in those periods. He's not quite as dangerous. We're able to, but he can then, in those instances, he probably carries accumulatively about 50 metres. And he's got the ball under control. I think this is the key thing for me, Paul, and why he must be, like, imagine coaching him. He must have driven coaches mad, because he's got the ball under control. The ball is present. It isn't as simple as he's just dead fast or he's just dead physical. It's there. He knows where it is.
Yeah.
And then on a couple of those occasions where he'd done a little bit of that, he'd then spray it out wide. And three of them hit gorgeously. And another three basically go into touch. It's the inconsistency that I think must drive his teammates mad, must drive his managers mad, but simultaneously, he's clearly hugely useful in the context of playing a game of footy.
Yeah, and it would be intriguing to see him coached by Klopp or coached by Guardiola, and just at that very highest level, can they get him? And this is what's going on behind the scenes all the time, isn't it? They're looking at players and thinking, can we take him from what he is now to what we think he can be? Referencing Jota, Klopp mentioned him in the press conference before the game. He said, people were saying to us before we signed him, he doesn't score enough goals. And he said, but we're looking at him in the context of the role he plays in that side, and the wide players for that Wolves team were doing so much work that by the time they were getting the ball, they're not sharp enough. And he was saying, we could see directly how we take him from what he was then to what he is now. And if we're all honest, I don't think there was a single Liverpool fan, definitely not one I knew. I didn't see any online going, great signing, that for 40 million quid.
Or when we were doing the transfer games that we play, like, you know, making a big pitch for him or anything like that.
We wouldn't even mention him, would we? Yeah. And it's interesting that it's the opposite. It's the fan versus coach thing, isn't it? Like, we all talk about the Traore thing, and it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see, because who knows, this could still happen. I'm not sure. How old is he? 25?
26, yeah.
26. It'll be interesting to see if any of them do look at him and say, we can take all of the things we've talked about, because on paper, those attributes are ridiculous. Like, if you're playing top trumps with him, you're like, yeah, you'd take him, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But it's whether anyone thinks they can take him from where he is now to the highest level. And I think it's intriguing.
Let's talk about our main fella. It's a bold move to bring Divock on anyway. I would say, John, it's one that works regardless of the goal. I think he makes us better. I think it's great to see him between the sticks. I think he suddenly makes the Wolves defenders go, oh no, there's this now as well. And I think that's important in amongst all of this. But it is such a unique, spectacular, strange Liverpool career, the likes of which, you know, certainly in the modern era, I don't think you're able to see anything equivalent to. And it's just a really good finish. It's just a really neat piece of play when the ball comes across. You know, it's not something that's a bit weird or anything like that. It's the sort of goal that if he scores on 70, you go, and that's a great centre-forwards goal. We could probably do with a bit more of that.
Yeah. Yeah, just on your point on the sub, it's funny because I was looking at the bench and I was thinking I'd bring Origi on here. He'd be my first one, which isn't normally me, but I just thought with the weather and the type of game it was and, you know, the fact that, you know, who else was sort of on there and sort of what they're good at, really. I thought, oh, I'd probably go for Divock here, but I'd have done him for Jota or maybe at a push Mane. So I'm going 4-2-3-1. I thought was dead interesting and how he sort of, you know, almost went, well, they're not playing with a real midfield anymore, so let's have, you know, the two doing that. And then And then a free sort of, you know, finding that space, you know, just behind. I think sort of what he ended up sort of going for. I thought the sub made it harder for us to go through the lines. I thought that extra midfielder, you know, you could see the, you know, either the centre half or Thiago and Fabinho, whoever it was on the ball, just finding that extra pass a little bit sort of more difficult. But I thought once we got it up, I thought we were more dangerous. And a big part of that, as you say, was Divock, was how he played. And I thought he was sharp from the off. He was a little bit unlucky one where he spins a man in a similar sort of way and then slips sort of just before he hits it, really. But for the goal, he's genuinely excellent. And look, I've watched it a million times, like we all have. And you watch
every
it.
Every angle.
Yeah. I tweeted that from our account last night as soon as Liverpool put it up, because I wanted to watch it. But
your Sonos were delighted with that.
Absolutely delighted with that one.
I know. It was a good one for everyone's favourite LFC media partner. But I think it, you know, the next time you watch it, which will be probably, you know, you might even be watching it now while you're listening to this, and if so, fair play. Divock's near post run is genuinely excellent, and so as soon as Salah goes, he goes, and he's right there, and he's like, I'm going to get to that point first, and then I'm going to control what happens next. And it's really smart centre forward play from someone who I don't think is necessarily, you know, equated with that, really. You know, when we talk about Divock, you know, obviously we talk about the big goals and stuff like that, the big moments, the clutch player, which is a phrase that, you know, has been adapted obviously from America for him. But I think, you know, he's always felt like, oh, he's a bit instinct or whatever it is, and he's got, you know, good physical attributes, but that's like really good number nine forward play. That's the rush Rushy would have done. Do you know what I mean?
Does what Rushy would do.
Yeah, I'm gonna get to the place I want to be, and then I'm gonna get the ball, and then I'm gonna do the next thing, really. And then as soon as he gets there, he's in control, and he's like, the space that I'm in is the most important thing. And Salah's obviously really cool, and then boom, and then he's there. And I don't know what the keeper's doing, but it still is a really good finish. But I think it is worth, you know, as I say, watching again for what Divock's doing while Mo Salah's got the ball, because it reinforces the point that Klopp keeps making, going, he's one of the best centre forwards in the world. You know, I think he wants to ring up five or six clubs and bollock them for not playing him.
That's what I think. He's furious. I've never seen a manager furious with so other many football clubs.
I think that's part of the reason why we've promoted that Sporting Director, you know, because he's like, I'm not hiring any of these picks. They've not even signed Divock. Like, if he interviewed them, he'd almost interview them just to get them in and go, so tell me why we need Borta Vigi, and this answer better be good. There's not a question two.
There is more and more suggesting that he didn't want to leave, that he hasn't wanted to leave at certain moments, Harry, because he doesn't want to step down. Like, I've got this thing here. And I think this is a really interesting point. I mean, you know, in lots of ways, I think Liverpool might not entirely want this attitude to spread. Sometimes you do want to move players along. But I think a really good example, actually, and I do wonder if it's something that's in the back of Origi's mind, is his Belgian counterpart in Christian Benteke, who I think's had a couple of seasons at Palace where, if we're all honest about it, I feel from the outside, he's looked a bit disinterested in football. Like, I did really well at Villa. I got me big go. I failed. I'm now playing for Crystal Palace. What am I getting out of bed for? Because I'm never going to get another go at that. I can think of other examples around that. You know, Morgan Schneiderlin was a footballer who looked great at Southampton, goes to Man United, fails, and then fails dismally at Everton, which, well, to be fair, lots of people do. But there is this, you know, I do wonder if in the back of Divock's mind is, when I don't do this anymore, I'll never get to do this again. So I'll just keep doing this for as long as I can.
I think you need to frame the Origi conversation almost more in terms of his mentality and his personality, because I think he's one of those people that is just quite happy to just be where he's at in life. And don't get me wrong, he's done incredibly, scored goals in Champions League finals to win the games. He's, you know, he's won all these things and done all these incredible things and scored all these ridiculous, quite frankly, goals. But he doesn't need to be playing, in my mind, football every single week, because he wants to be on the biggest stage and he wants to have the chance to come on and make an impact and make a difference in these big games, on literally in the biggest team on the biggest stage. And I think when Klopp speaks after, and he's kind of like, it's after a breakup, and he's like, oh, he just needs to find someone who really loves him, because it can't be me, because I'm not in it, but I want him to find someone who's really going to take him and like look after him and play him loads. And Klopp can't offer him that, but that's clearly an open thing that Origi knows, that we all know, that Klopp knows, but he's okay with it. And I can see why he's okay with it, because like you said, he's never going to go anywhere again where he's going to get the chance to win trophies, to play around these footballers that he's playing with. And I just don't think he's that bothered. I don't think he's the type of person, like Milner said before, hasn't he, that before Origi comes on in every game, he's thinking, I don't think Origi knows what he's doing here. Like, I don't think he has a clue what he's coming on and doing. And I don't think he's listened to anything in the pre-match, in the chats. And he just comes on and he does his job. And I think he's happy to just keep on doing his job and see where it takes him. And he's not thinking too far ahead in the future. He's just enjoying where he's at right now. But, you know, maybe in a couple seasons' time he will move on. But that's why we've all got to very much enjoy it while he's still here.
It is the suggestion that he is, in one sense, very clearly in control of his own destiny. Difficulty he plays for Liverpool because he wants to, is something I think, Paul. Now, it might be that it's a little bit different. It could be that he could be wooed if someone came in and made an offer for him. But he doesn't seem to be, you know, doesn't seem to have been, and from all the reports coming out, you know, in the summer, it doesn't seem like he was exceptionally desperate to move on. It's what you need in a season, a couple of people like this, you know, and it may be that some seasons it is Divock Origi, and it might be in a couple of seasons it's not. And it might be that in a couple of seasons he'll therefore absolutely frustrate you. But I think it's staggering that he's been at the scene for so many of these things, even some stuff where he's on the pitch. Even if he's not directly contributing to the huge moments, he is just around so many huge Liverpool moments across the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's something I love about Divock. He allows me to talk about two of my favourite things about football. We'll come on to the second one, which is Manchester United under Alex Ferguson. I haven't been able to talk about that long enough now. But the other one is the biggest one, which I love banging on about, which is... We just don't look at footballers like we look at anybody else in life. This is his job. This is what he does for a living. And it's mad that we only look at and we focus absolutely on the thing that they do at the end of the week for an hour and a half. That's what we focus on. That's not his job. That's not mainly his job. Mainly what his job is getting up every day, going into a training ground, hanging around with his mates, chatting to the people in the canteen, chatting to the kit people, doing all that. And then the game at the end of the week is like the smallest part of it, time-wise. And we all focus on this other thing. And just think about it as your day-to-day life. Like, he is the facilities he goes to every day, brilliant. Clearly enjoys where he lives.
Best coaches in the world, or at least some of the best coaches in the world.
Absolutely. Plays, clearly gets on with everyone. Everyone clearly loves him. He's got this cult iconic status. The fans sing his name. What? Why would you want? He gets paid loads of money.
Time, isn't he? Let's be honest.
He's having a lovely time. This is it's a relevant side story. I remember when I worked in a huge law firm many, many years ago now, 15 years ago. And there was a girl I worked with who I loved a bit. And she had this conversation in a pub once with a senior partner. And he was saying to her, because the assumption is if you work in a place like that, you want to be senior partner. And she said to him after a few bevvies, why do I have to though? Like, why can't I just be happy doing the job I do now forever? I'm happy doing the job I do now forever. And why isn't it, as a company, wouldn't you rather have loads of me? And then you'll get the people who want to get to the top and be the bosses, and they'll be made up to have me in their team. And he was furious with it. And I remember thinking, absolutely right, spot on. Which leads me on to my other favourite topic of Manchester United and Alex Ferguson, which is they had loads of them. Who was the lad who scored when we were...
Makeda.
Typical example, a lad who's just knocking around. How many games did he play that season? Yeah. And I remember he scored the goal against us, and he scored the goal against Villa or Spurs.
He didn't score against us. He scored two big goals. One was Spurs.
I'm getting confused with that. And that was like deep in my heart, it was against us. And I genuinely, with someone like Divock, and I'm with you 100% as well on, as a club, you don't want this being it. Well, everyone just thinks that he can hang around. But he's also been away to other clubs and looked at it. Yeah. I remember happening to Sturridge. You go out on loan somewhere else and you come back and you're like, what did that teach you? It taught me I don't want to go anywhere else. Yeah. That's what it taught me. Because do you know what? Their training facilities are crap. The lads aren't that much of a laugh. And generally speaking, it's grafting. Miserable, yeah. It's miserable. It's not fun. Our boss, right, he expects a lot, but he tells jokes. Like, do you know what I mean? That even I go to Everton, Rafa's not doing that many jokes, is he? No, you hear Andros Townsend.
Certainly not at the moment.
No. Exactly. Andros Townsend loves Rafa because he loves the fact that he never gives him any credit. You're like, well, Andros, you're a dying breed in football, I think, lad.
But also, see how you get on with that in February.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And look, why would you not want to do what Divock's doing now? This is my big thing. So, I mean, give him a lifetime contract for me. Be happy with it.
The last bit of this, and just to do it relatively quickly, John, is he's going to prove important. again, you know, this isn't the end of his importance to Liverpool this season. He's here now. We all, to some degree, have an eye on, well, firstly, Milan on Tuesday, where you've got to expect he starts. We all, to a degree, have an eye on January, where even if it's only two league games that the big fellas miss, it's still two league games. Someone's got to play them. There's also going to be a third round FA Cup, possibly a fourth round FA Cup, possibly League Cup semi-finals. In Divock Origi's future, there's, you know, forget last minute winners, although I'd like more of them too, please. There's 6-7 starts on the horizon where we need a footballer like that to play, not just for Liverpool, but to play well for Liverpool.
And in that sense, you know, he couldn't be coming into form for a better time for the team, really, isn't it? And so the manager will be made up, you know, obviously, as you say, so made up with the goal, but also the fact that, you know, going into January, which I think most of the games obviously will play half for a variety of reasons, that you've got someone who's looking sharp, and like we both said before, not just the goal, but how he was sort of through the game. He'd be delighted with how Minamino's doing, you know, the fact that he's sort of contributing and stuff like that. And, you know, we will need these lads, and, you know, you need the lads throughout the season, a successful season. Different people come to the party at different times, and sometimes it's unlikely ones, and sometimes, you know, it's just Mo Salah scoring again. I think, you know, we still don't know. I've noticed, you know, there was a little bit more in the press last couple of days of we're still pushing to have Salah and Mane available for that Chelsea game, but you know, we know after that they will be sort of going, so there'll be, you know, Divock, there'll be opportunities there for him, but probably before that as well, because 9 games in December and not every player can play every minute of those. So it's
40 start one of Leeds and Leicester, for instance, 26th and 28th. You do expect that Divock is starting one of those two.
Yeah, quite possibly. And so it's great that he's coming on looking hungry, looking bright, and looking like, you know, we can add to this football team.
It's a goal you're going to look back on, Harriet, if it all comes together. Chelsea dropping points. They didn't deserve to beat West Ham. I did a little thing for you from StatsBomb, which is attached. It's not that interesting. It's just that West Ham create more than Chelsea over the course of the game. Liverpool, unbelievably creative, not just in this one against Wolves when you look back on it in hindsight, but overall the season. City remain excellent. Bernardo Silva looks at the minute other than Salah to be the informed player in the division. It's a weekend where I felt you'd see a top three. That was a definite top three at the end. West Ham somewhat scupper that. I do sort of wonder if we're beginning to move into a phase where we can see the top two.
Oh, interesting. I think there's still definitely a top three because, I mean, West Ham did to Chelsea exactly what they did to us, didn't they? So West Ham were very, very good, I will say. And Chelsea they maybe deserved to get a point, but they actually didn't deserve to get all three. West Ham were right, really entitled to win that game, and I was very glad that they did, and it put me in a good mood for our game. But like you said, none of that matters if we don't go and capitalise on it. Manchester City, I think we always expected to get the 3 points against Watford. They're playing very well. They don't look like they're going to stumble, but everyone is stumbling, and we just need to make sure. I mean, I think it's mad at this stage in the season that we're literally looking at those two results relentlessly, like refreshing our tab and being like, right, have they scored, and it's mad that so early on there is two other teams that we're all within 1 point, aren't we now? It's 1 point between first, second, third.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is absolutely mad. I think it's still gonna go on for quite a while with three horses in the race, but hopefully we'll be at the top by the end of it.
I think it's interesting, John. Keepers having amazing games, all of a sudden it looks like the ladder's a bit of a stinker, frankly. I also think Fabianski should do better. Done the goalkeeping on show in the London Stadium was great at all on Saturday from seeing the highlights. They've had Chelsea keepers having amazing games and defenders scoring goals. They managed to keep up defenders scoring goals. They do not keep up keepers having amazing games.
Yeah. And there's been, you know, a little bit of talk around, isn't there, about, you know, Chelsea's, you know, goals, both scored and conceded compared to XG, and how they're sort of outperforming and how that can't sort of go on forever. That said, I'm still probably a little bit more in the Harrier camp that I think that they are going to be there or thereabouts towards the end of the season. But, you know, at the same time, it wouldn't necessarily surprise me if you are looking at Liverpool City, you know, as the top two, just because they, you know, they've got the pedigree. Obviously, they've sort of done it, and you know, we were obviously buzzing off of our performance, but everything I've seen from City at the weekend, they looked absolutely excellent in terms of, you know, the way they controlled that game, you know, particularly obviously in the first half. And so I think Chelsea, you know, from a point of view of, you know, they'll have to go some to sort of stick with those two teams, might fall away, but I still think, you know, they'll be, you know, I still think
keep the two teams honest. Is what I think.
And I still think they are. You know, we can't sort of, you know, completely sort of discount them, but it is interesting because Mendy's been playing out of this world. You know, I've talked before about, you know, watching that game at Brentford and that last 10 minutes. Basically, the difference between our result and their result at Brentford is him, and that's not to disparage Alisson too much. It's just a superhuman goalkeeper performance that Alisson didn't do, you know, on that day, but we know sort of is capable of, you know. But as you say, suddenly. You know, you can't rely too much on two certain individuals doing certain things, and I think, you know, they have relied on, well, we'll just mend, he'll just be brilliant all season, and when he isn't, he sort of to lose the game. So we'll see sort of where they go from here. But December is where the action is, isn't it?
They picked up a lot of injuries as well, haven't they? And in a congested schedule, you feel like that might make a difference.
Yeah, December is where the action is. Liverpool and City know the terrain, they know the course, and it looks to me as though Liverpool and City, in different ways really, just pairing, just finding that little bit more where... I say Chelsea maybe we'll be looking at it, and Chelsea will just win every other game now for the rest of December. They're more than capable of doing that. You do wonder about the Liverpool and City thing, though, where they literally know what this is. And it was interesting to me that when the snatches that I heard about of City's game against Watford, there's a lot of the City supporters singing about Liverpool. All of a sudden, they're just thinking, we know what this is. This is going to become that. Yeah, that's all right then. We're up for a bit of that.
I think that's what it is. And I am a fan of Chelsea's in the sense of, I think they are the real deal, and I do think they will. I think the way you put it is right. I think they'll keep us honest, but I do think over this period, I would be surprised if it's not at the other side of Christmas and January. I'd be surprised if there isn't a gap between City and us and Chelsea,
even though we go there. That's the one. That's the one X factor to me is City play both Liverpool and City. Sorry, Chelsea play both Liverpool and City. So even if they have a little bit of an edgy one now, they're more than capable of winning both of those games, which would make it look a little bit different again.
Yeah, and I know with the bookies, City are favourites, and probably rightly so because of the fixtures that have already been played. And the only thing I've been thinking lately about this Liverpool side now in its current incarnation is I'm not sure it cares that much whether it's home or away. I don't think this Liverpool side's going to be thinking of going to Chelsea and going to City. Going back to what I was saying at the start of the show about how you approach a game, we're not going to those games thinking we'll have a draw. We're going into both of those games saying we'll beat you. We've beat you before. We'll beat you again. Like, we're well better than you. Something I love, there was just a snippet no one really mentioned after one of the games a couple of weeks ago. Don't know which one it was. And Salah was getting interviewed. And he said about winning the league and the Champions League.
Yeah.
And he just said it dead, like, matter-of-factly. Yeah. That's what we're here for. Like, we're not here for this game in December. Yeah. Like, and that, I think that is such an insight into the mentality of this side. And not just this side, but the leaders in the team, the superstars in the team, going to everyone else. Yeah, well, we have to go and beat Chelsea because we're going to win the league and we're going to win the Champions League. And we haven't got that much time left to do that. So let's just do it now. I think that level of mentality is what separates us from City. The big one on Saturday was... I was saying before, and unfortunately, I watched the City game. Unfortunately, Watford decided to play City without playing many defenders like they did against us, which I thought was an interesting tactic. But I was saying, going into that game, think about the mentality in the City dressing room. They're going into that game thinking of Chelsea have dropped points, and Liverpool have dropped points as well. Liverpool got a last minute winner with Divock Origi. Oh, here we are again, eh? Back in this, are we? And there is that. You've got to think the year they pipped us to it, that's what they started getting that story. Oh, the Vincent Kompany top corner, that. Oh, here we go. Well, it's theirs. We then got that the season after. There's a big thing here of what story happens. The fact that they went and dominated that game and won it was a big sign for them as well.
Okay then, subscribe to the Anfield Wrap. As John says, it's a massive December, massive, massive December. You can do it in a number of different ways. If you go onto Spotify on your desktop, you can now get all of our audio through there if you want. We are on YouTube as well. You can do that through your YouTube app or again on desktops. And hopefully this week it may be possible. We are not 100%, but I am going to jump the gun a tiny little bit that you'll be able to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap through the app with just simple presses of buttons, maybe one, maybe two, no more than two. Andy Heaton assures me working night and day on this, but we're very, very close to getting that confirmed, and when we do, there'll be an email going out to absolutely everybody we can send one to. We'd love you to come and enjoy everything that we do here with the Anfield Wrap. It is a time to get stuck in to the mighty boys in red. It's Milan, and then it's Villa, and then it's Newcastle, then it's Tottenham, then it's Leicester, then everyone gets to have Christmas Day off, and then we can get back stuck into it for Leeds at 12:30 on the Saturday. Can't wait for that. Leicester away, absolutely can't wait for that. That will be a serious day and night for all of us in every single sense. And And then it is the game against Chelsea. What a time to support this football team as it marches towards, at the very least, a title challenge, if not a 20th league title. John, you've, like, in a countdown-ish way, you and I have both done our workings in the same part of the page. Read me the team for Milan.
Well, this is my team.
It's the team, John.
Oh, so Neil, are you sure you're going to have Christmas Day off?
No, he didn't beat himself.
Nothing will upload on Christmas Day. we're not bastards here. Go on.
Have you put Christmas Day off?
Yeah.
I've put a keeper because I'm not sure what the score is with them at the moment. I don't want to play Alisson, so one of the other lads.
Yeah.
Maybe Taffarel.
I think I am interrupting straight away. I love that. That's what Klopp will be doing as well. Yeah. Like that line you just said, just one of the others.
Can you just tell me which one? Same to Actor Bay. Can you just tell me what?
Yeah. And then I've gone for a back line of Nico Williams, Konate, Phillips, and Tsimikas. I'll be cross if not Phillips doesn't start, to be honest with you.
Klopp out.
It might be a bit Klopp out if not Phillips doesn't start because, you know. I mean, yeah, he deserves it for last season. Then I picked Tyler Moore and then I picked Chamberlain. And then I've gone for Hendo just because I think we probably need one of the senior lads. And I feel like Henderson's played the least number of minutes over the last month. I've not sort of double checked that, but that's the feelings to me. So I've gone for him on there. I've gone for Mane up top with Origi and Minamino. I think Keita is close, so he might be able to sort of come on and do a little bit there. But that's what I've gone for. And then in terms of, you know, the others, I think you'd probably need... you know, a little bit on the bench and leave a few behind. So if possible, I'd like to leave Matip behind, Fabinho and Salah, and then have the others sort of decorated around.
I like it. The one thing I'd say is it wouldn't surprise me with Henderson / Keita / Thiago, and it wouldn't surprise me with Mane / Salah / Jota if in his mind he's going 45 for you, 45 for you.
Yeah, he's done that before.
There's five subs, isn't it? So 45 for you, 45 for you is what I think we might see a little bit.
We see Salah 100%. I think Salah just wants to play every game and score in every single game.
I think we might get 45 minutes of Salah and 45 minutes of Mane.
I don't want 45 minutes of either of them, but I think that's what we're going to get.
We can't have Gordon and we can't have Milner.
Want 90 of Nat Phillips, not only.
Solely 90 of Nat Phillips, have to play every position.
I think the only thing that complicates this, and Oxlade-Chamberlain mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, we're playing Milan after San Siro, yeah?
Yeah.
And I think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, how many times do you get to play at the San Siro in your career as an elite professional? And
I want to play.
There will be some lads, loads of lads saying, look, mate, I just want to play. And I think the five sub things does make a big difference. So I would pick the team similar to what John read out. I actually think it'll be a lot stronger than that.
I think it wouldn't surprise me if Van Dijk starts and does 45 minutes for Phillips or something like that. Phillips, for instance, gets 45 minutes in the game at Preston. And it's fair to say that the Deepdale and the San Siro have got a lot in common. Everyone wants to play at them. So I think it wouldn't surprise me if there's three unlikely selections in our minds, and then all three of those unlikely selections are subbed at half time, and it leaves him with two subs that he's then going to work out. I think Morton definitely plays. I think Chamberlain definitely plays. If I'm Nico, I'd be disappointed not to get it. He got the game against Porto, and if I'm Tsimikas, I'd be disappointed. And Konate surely plays.
Yeah,
and I think you've got to go Minamino and Origi. I think everyone else, it wouldn't surprise me if there's three subs at half time where the three you're going, I can't believe he's gone that strong, all don't do the second half. Yeah. The only thing I would say on that though is the travelling aspect. I think the travelling's more than playing. If you sort of know, like, if you
that's
can offer
why
them,
you do try and leave a couple. So I've picked Fabinho, Salah, and Alisson not to take.
Just leaving them at home.
Yeah.
But then if it's Jota rather than Salah or whatever, then or Thiago rather than Fabinho, then that's fine. But I think you do pick one in each position. I think
18 points for the Reds.
No, I don't think. I don't think we'll win the game just because it's a massive game for Milan, isn't it? And I just think that mindset difference between whoever you pick will know that this is a nice stroll in December.
It's not like quite the Porto game, is it? Because this is like, it's like a cup final. You know, the Porto game wasn't a cup final. The cup final is the one that they have against Atletico. That's the problem. And I think that is. I sort of know where you're coming from. For Milan, it's a cup final.
Yeah. So I can't see us winning. If they do, fucking fair play.
I think we're going to win.
Fair play.
I just have to do the maths of 18 points for that. Yeah.
18 points.
Not an 18 pointer. That's not one nearly.
No, I understand that. Yeah, we're winning.
That's the other side of it that I think is important as well. Like, no one's ever done it. I think no English side has ever done it.
Yeah.
And there'll be an element of Salah going, well, why don't we just do it? We'll just do it. We'll win all the games. Just play us all. Don't worry about
it. Just a fun record to break, isn't it?
Yeah. Just another laugh. Excellent stuff. Everything is better in the light of Divock Origi turning and rifling the ball into the back of the net. It is that straightforward. When football matches can go from being ones that are going to drive you mad, and trust me, there's it driving you mad and thinking, God, I do have three shows and a piece of writing on this. And then suddenly Divock pops up and does what he does, changes everything, changes the way the whole world looks. It's an absolute pleasure to have that sort of thing around. Thank you very much indeed for Andy Heaton for producing and realising halfway through we weren't going to ask him to climb a mountain and taking his coat off. Thank you very much to Harriet Pryor, to Paul Cope and to John Gibbons. It has been a fantastic, fantastic Anfield Rap show. There are so many of them at the moment. It's because the Reds are fantastic. Thanks to Divock. Sports Social Podcast Network.